This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 27th of March 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of March 2015. And this week, the editors were Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are fury over shops selling guns and legal highs, key Silver Hill projects facing piecemeal build, and a homeless hostel facing closure. So, may we have behind the first headline story, Shirley.
Fury over shops selling guns and legal highs. A new shop in Winchester selling legal highs and ball-bearing guns has sparked outrage among local residents. The site on Stockbridge Road has been taken over by a Southampton businessman who signed the lease on Saturday and opened on Monday. On sale are a range of brightly coloured ball-bearing guns, T-shirts, rucksacks and belts, as well as a range of legal highs, bongs and pipes. But locals have voiced concerns branding the synthetic drugs as dangerous. It's not really what you want, and legal highs are just not really appropriate, said Pat Maguire, 51, of Walpole Road in Stanmore. It's not good, the alternative therapist added. I'm into natural health and I work closely with medical professionals, and they've seen people coming in being a bit psychotic. They don't know the toxicity. They are new drugs and that's what makes them dangerous. We don't know the long-term effects. It's ridiculous, really. Mother of two, Natalie Harvey, 43, of Spring Lane, Colden Common, said, I just think it's terrible that people have their heads in the sand about these things. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and even though I have brought her up well, I really worry about things like legal highs with peer pressure from friends. I watched a TV program the other night about delivery service for legal highs, although not round here. I just can't believe they're opening a shop in Winchester. Kids can be so easily led these days by friends. It's such a worry. I, for one, will be having another talk to my daughter about the dangers. Surely they need permission to open by the council or something. What are they thinking? In November, Winchester City Council ordered trader Barbara Cooper to stop selling herbal highs at her shop in the antiques market at King's Walk, threatening her with eviction if she continued. But the owner of the unnamed shop, who asked not to be identified, said he was a businessman simply selling a product and was responding to customer demand. I've been doing this now for about a year and a half and opened up this place when I was told there was demand for it in Winchester by my customers. We had to expand our business anyway. We had too much competition in Southampton and wanted to increase our market share. He said his company enforces a strict policy about selling to people aged under 18 and will ask for ID for anyone who looks younger than 25.
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Richard.
Which is, key Silver Hill projects facing piecemeal build. Crucial parts of the Silver Hill development could be built separately from the delayed scheme as doubts grow over the intentions of its developer. Years of delays to the £165 million plans for shops and flats could mean new services, including car parking and a new St Clement's doctor's surgery, will be brought forward, Winchester County Council heard. Kevin Warren, head of estates, warned last Wednesday's cabinet that large parts of the King's Walk and Friarsgate area were crumbling. As reported in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, Stagecoach has threatened to redevelop its bus station if work doesn't start soon, while doctors have long warned that St Clement's is not fit for purpose. Friarsgate car park, which closes this week, could be demolished, added Transport Chief Councillor Ernie Jeffs. The trustworthiness of TIAA Henderson Real Estate, the council's development partner, has been questioned at two key meetings over the last 10 days. Plans for affordable flats at a bus station were said by Henderson to be viable in 2009, then unviable in 2014, before becoming an option again following its defeat in the High Court. Councillor Todd said, "If someone comes to us at the 2012 compulsory purchase review and says this scheme is viable, then in 2014 swears blind it is not viable, and then comes back in 2015 and says actually it is viable, it raises questions of trustworthiness and whether we are able to do business with these people." Meanwhile, Lord Newby, Deputy Government Chief Whip to the House of Lords, urged civic chiefs to get a move on in a visit to Winchester on Friday.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And the third story is homeless hostel facing closure. Severe funding cuts spark fears. A homeless hostel serving some of Winchester's most vulnerable people is facing closure after cuts to social services. The looming closure of Milford House has sparked fears of bed blocking at shelters and an increase in rough sleeping, while residents criticise a lack of support from its thinning workforce. Lodgers have been forced to seek alternative accommodation after Hampshire County Council slashed £10 million from its support funds. The hostel in Christchurch Road provides 20 rooms for people who have moved on from Winchester Night Shelter or the Trinity Centre, but still need help finding work, developing skills, or accessing health services. Residents believe the doors will shut once they find new beds. Tony Paris said, "It's making everyone's lives a misery, really, because you don't know when it's going to close down. I haven't been drinking for about 2 years now, and it drove me to drink again." Housing Association First Wessex, which operates Milford House, wrote to residents announcing the closure, but denied it was a certainty when approached by the Hampshire Chronicle. In a statement, it said, "We will be working with the Winchester City Council and other housing providers to consider the future of this accommodation, and we will continue to work with our residents." Winchester Night Shelter is looking to ease the expected shortfall of beds by renting a four-bedroomed house. But Michelle Price, Night Shelter manager, called Milford House invaluable. She said, "The type of supported accommodation offered by Milford House is very limited in the Winchester area." Hampshire County Council's budget for supporting vulnerable people is being cut by 43%, from £24 million to less than £14 million. The Overview and Scrutiny Committee heard on Monday that rough sleeping in places such as car parks had dropped from 14 at Christmas to 2, but has since edged back to 5. Councillor Chris Pines said budget cuts will cost taxpayers more in the long term without improvements to courts, health agencies and the probation service. "Because we do this as piecemeal instead of having a holistic approach to supporting vulnerable people, it costs us a hell of a lot more," he said.
And that concludes the headline stories. And now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, editorial comment, and finally Westminster diary. I'll start with the death notices. Bartlett, Desmond Ingram Des Bartlett, peacefully aged 88. Cheetham, David James Cheetham, peacefully aged 81. Cresswell, Derek Cresswell, peacefully surrounded by his family, aged 82. Friend, Hubert Ashley Friend, peacefully aged 91. Latham, Cyril Latham, he's the late butcher of Twyford, peacefully aged 96. Leadbitter, Ivy Dorothy Joan Leadbitter. Mulster, Ellen Nell Mulster, peacefully at home with a family, aged 80. Morris, Pat Morris, peacefully at Yeovil Hospital, aged 85. Polglaze, Phil Polglaze, aged 39. Privet, Noreen Privet, peacefully after a short illness at North Hampshire Hospital, aged 87. Ridge, Joan Mary Ridge, aged 79. Silvestro, Nicola Nico Silvestro, in his 96th year. Warmington, Joyce Joy Warmington, peacefully aged 89. And finally, Wells, Anne Wells, aged 80. And now we're going to have Christian comment, and it's read by Shirley.
And this one is headed, Time to Honour Archbishop Romero, Prophet of El Salvador. Oscar Romero, 1917 to 1980, former Archbishop of El Salvador, whose murder has never been conclusively investigated, is beloved of Christians beyond denominational boundaries. At last, his importance is being recognized by the Catholic Church, as his beatification is imminent, and this week is highlighted with services in the UK in his honour, having begun with St Martin in the Fields Church, London, on Saturday, March 21st. But why is this important for Christians? In Europe, we have almost forgotten the war in El Salvador, Latin America, from 1979 to 1992. This was a violent conflict between the military-led government of El Salvador and the National Liberation Front, the FMLN, which lasted for over 12 years. After 10 years of war, more than 1 million people had been displaced, 40% of the homes of newly displaced people destroyed, and another 25% in need of major repairs. Death squad activities further escalated in 1990. More than 70,000 people were killed, many in the course of gross violation of their human rights. More than 25% of the populace was displaced as refugees. Enter Archbishop Oscar Romero, appointed by the Vatican as a known conservative and no liberation theologian, becoming Archbishop of San Salvador in 1977. While this appointment was welcomed by the government, many priests were disappointed. The progressive priests fearing that his conservative reputation would negatively affect liberation theology's commitment to the poor. They were soon proved wrong, as the new archbishop began to understand the realities of the poor of El Salvador. The decisive moment of his conversion came on March the 12th, 1977, when Rutilio Grande, a progressive Jesuit priest and personal friend who had been creating self-reliance groups among the poor, was assassinated. His death had a profound impact on Romero, who later stated, "When I looked at Rutilio lying there dead, I thought, if they have killed him for doing what he did, then I too have to walk the same path." In response, Romero revealed a radicalism, speaking out against poverty, social injustice, assassinations and torture. His commitment to the poor of El Salvador became outstanding. The words, "If I am killed, I will rise again in the poor of El Salvador," were prophetic. On March 24th, 1980, Romero celebrated Mass for the first anniversary of Sara Miedi de Pinto, mother of Jorge Pinto, editor of El Independiente, one of the few voices for human rights. The Gospel was John 12:23-26. Unless a grain of wheat shall die, it will not bear fruit. He was gunned down immediately after these words. At last we can officially honour his memory and follow his inspiration, finding courage to fight injustice, whatever the cost. And this is written by Mary Gray.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And there are 11 letters this week, and one with one read by Richard.
It comes from E. Mayer, who pleads, "Give us back our high street." Sir, Kim Gottlieb will go down in history as the man who helped save Winchester. This is a golden opportunity to regenerate the town. The truth is, it has now become a bit lifeless. Now that the council are on the back foot, maybe they could give us back our high street. Winchester High Street is no place for fast food stalls and market traders selling cheap rubbish. It's enough to break your heart. And that heart belongs to E. Mayer of Chester Road, Winchester.
And from James Anderson, we have, "Renewable energy is only part of the solution." Sir, renewable campaigners are fond of claiming that others do not listen to the scientists, whereas it is the campaigners themselves who appear not to be listening. Far from saying that the solution is a mix of renewables, as campaigners claim, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, is clear that renewables will only ever be a part of the solution. Two of the technologies that the IPCC sees as important are CDR, carbon dioxide removal, and CCS, carbon capture and storage, and neither is in the renewables taxonomy. Nor does the IPCC subscribe to the idea of indiscriminate panic measures, or else we are doomed. It does say that excluding a technology makes a solution both more difficult and more expensive to achieve, and using a more expensive technology when a cheaper one is available will lead to less of a solution. Crowding out is the IPCC term. One might consider these statements to be self-evident common sense, but it helps to have the IPCC tag on them. Hence, attempts by campaigners to exclude nuclear power would appear to be counterproductive. And as the least cost solution for the UK, the government has wisely decided that plans for it should be brought forward from 2025. The IPCC points out that the intermittents, wind and solar, require extra measures to meet demand and have in mind store and recover technologies, which it notes incur energy losses and require equipment that greatly increase the overall cost. Solar PV power in the UK is easily the most expensive of the solutions, at a levelised £160 per megawatt before the cost of the extra measures are included. And with the IPCC crowding out in mind, it just looks plain daft. In coming to believe that the cost of either solar or wind power is somehow covered by the 8% climate levy, Frank Adsett, Chronicle Letters, February the 26th, has been cruelly misled. And that was from James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Roads look like rubbish tips, according to David Elton. Sir, having lived in rural Hampshire for over 20 years, I have watched with great pleasure how the city of Winchester has successfully transformed itself and is now firmly established as historic Winchester, and is indeed consistently voted one of the top 10 places to live in the UK. Coupled with this, the area around Winchester now has national park status, and many adjoining areas of outstanding natural beauty and special scientific interest status, all of which reflects and acknowledges the heritage and natural beauty of this special part of Hampshire. Why then has Hampshire County Council allowed all the roads which feed into and through this area and to our fine historic city to become utter eyesores and rubbish tips? Are councillors blind to the fact that if you drive on any of the major roads, M3, A34, A31, A272, etc., they are lined with ever-increasing amounts of litter and fly-tipping? Given the fact that our roads are already congested, and at certain times the best you can do is sit and look around you, I find it staggering that no councillors have taken a keener interest in cleaning up this problem and taking a pride in this, one of the most beautiful parts of the UK. We must deploy resource to help with this issue, or we will risk losing our increasingly growing numbers of visitors who are vital to the economies of Winchester and the towns and villages around. We rely on the beauty of the city and country to provide the full package to provide here... Sorry, I'll read that again. To provide the full package that attracts people here, and for us to ignore this problem and assume it goes unnoticed is sheer folly. David Elton, Longwood, Ossobury.
The next letter is entitled Ignorance of the Planning Process. Tommy Geddes, Chronicle Letters, March the 12th, seems to have a bit of a problem with the Winchester Deserves Better campaign. I wonder who he's been talking to. His earlier letter in January accused the large numbers who turned out for the Winchester March of not wanting any change. Not true. And now, by urging campaigners to stand in the local elections, appears to suggest that only elected members of the council are allowed to voice an opinion. If he's so concerned with the democratic process, he could ask Henderson, who only represent their own shareholders, why they are appealing the High Court judgment when our Winchester County Council elected representatives have accepted it. His comments about the WDB group drawing together proposals while having no accountability through the ballot box displays an astonishing ignorance of the planning process. As a former member of the planning committee, I can reassure him that whatever alternative designs for Silver Hill might come forward in the future, they will ultimately have to go through the application process and be approved by the planning committee, which is made up of elected members. The opportunity for any individual or group to input ideas which will shape the place where they live is known as consultation. The problem with Silver Hill was that the two elements of social benefit, namely the bus station and on-site affordable housing, which were included in the original approved scheme, were removed with no consultation to suit Henderson. Maybe they should put up a candidate in the forthcoming election to ascertain how many Winchester residents they speak for. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And here we have another letter about litter from Roland Wateridge. Sir, I can assure Mr. and Mrs. Harris and Mr. Smith, Chronicle March the 12th, that other Hampshire residents share their concern and distress over the litter and fly-tipping epidemic on roadside verges, which is far more widespread than the examples which they quote. As far as local authority responsibilities are concerned, Wiltshire is a special case in having a single county-wide local authority. In Hampshire, 10 local authorities are responsible for clearing roadside litter within their own boundaries. However, in the case of trunk roads, such as the A34 and motorways, that responsibility falls on the Highways Agency, i.e. the Central Government Department for Transport. The fact of the matter is that no sooner than the gallant men and women, including volunteers, carry out this disagreeable task, litter and fly-tipping reappears within days. The real culprits are the mindless people who do this. How do we tackle that problem? And that was from Roland Wateridge, Collins Lane, Hursley.
And this one from Judith Martin, headed New Planning for Approved Scheme. Sir, if Henderson opts to build the consented scheme from 2009, as your article says in the Chronicle, March the 12th, surely it will still need a new planning application. This is because the agreed plans include the affordable housing. Despite the wording of the development agreement, allowing the option to provide the affordable housing off-site, in all the years I heard Thornfield and Allies and Morrison presenting their plans, the affordable housing was always designed in. It's on the top floor of Block B, single aspect, i.e. no through ventilation, off long, artificially lit corridors and generally pretty substandard, but it's nonetheless there. The point must be to improve it. It's hard to see how the approved scheme can be built without it, without a new application. On the point of the external professional advice the officers and members say they have relied on, as I write, the sale of BHS for £1 to a previously unheard-of company led by a previous bankrupt is all over the media. As the Financial Times points out, it's been known for years that the company was in trouble. Yet BHS was one of the many stores the council's retail advisers said we should aim to have in Winchester. No one on the council bothered to point out to Nathaniel Litchfield Partners, who gave this advice, that the company had been in Winchester but pulled out several years ago. The same applies to other stores we apparently need. Game, Clinton Cards, Mothercare, etc. All into receivership or administration, all, where they exist at all, on life support. One wonders if anyone actually read the report and what the consultants were paid for it. One also wonders who recommended the consultants. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this from Miranda Pinch. Agree to differ on Middle East issues. While I agree with Danny Habel's letter, March the 5th, that, quotes, we should all be raising our voices against the denial of security, safety and freedom of worship for minorities right across the world, close quote, I am perplexed at his attack on my references to Israel's failure to uphold such values, as it is Danny himself who keeps bringing Israel into the equation. My previous letter, in response to his misleading statements about the growth of Christianity within Israel, has been totally ignored. Just because one country in the Middle East may not be as openly persecuting minority religions as is the case in some parts of the Middle East, does not make it a beacon of human rights and religious freedoms. Should a crime be ignored because a neighbour's crime was more violent? I don't think such an argument would stand up in a court of law. Danny and I would both like to support Christians and the many others who are suffering in the Middle East right now. I believe Israel to be part of the problem. He sees it as part of the solution. I beg to be allowed to differ in my take on the facts and statistics which are freely available on the internet and even reported by Israeli human rights groups and the Israel newspaper Haaretz. Miranda Pinch, Downgate, Alsford, and the editor says that this correspondence is now closed.
And here we have a letter from Mark Benzie about diverting our discerning rats. Sir, while it's sad to see community spirit being quashed, fruit trees scheme scuppered, Chronicle March the 5th, I was relieved to learn that the discerning rats of full flood would only be attracted to fruit trees and hedges on public land and not to those in the many nearby gardens. That's from Mark Benzie, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
Too many dogs for Walker to control. And this from Katrina Ward. Sir, I have just returned from what I thought would be a nice walk in the woods, which are owned by Hampshire County Council. Then, out of nowhere, a gentleman came into view with four dogs on leads, pulling him, and five others loose. The dogs that were loose had, in my eyes, reverted back to pack animals and were overexcited. My husband had to grab our dog, who was totally overwhelmed. Then they smelt the treats I was carrying. Well, let's say that at 4'10", I came face to face with some very interesting saliva, and not to say some very muddy clothes. I was getting a little scared as they were totally out of control. The walker walked on and whistled, but there was a while before they responded. What if that had been a small child with a bag of sweets? This is not the dog's fault, but the walker's. Although I am in favour of this very worthwhile job, I am not in favour of them walking 8 or 9 dogs at a time. They should walk no more than 4 at a time and go back for another 4. This is laziness and greed. Come on, HCC, take a stand and make a restriction of 4 dogs walked at any one time. Please stop an accident that is waiting to happen. We all encounter this problem daily. Katrina Ward, Wharton Place, Winchester.
Jeff Naylor thinks that coalition is not such a bad idea. Sir, the proposal from Lord Baker for Conservative and Labour to form a coalition of national unity might not be such a bad thing, given they have so much in common. Both parties adhere to the neoliberal economic orthodoxy, which is demonstrably failing most people. They also share similar policies on fracking, student fees and a British nuclear deterrent, among others. In fact, I would suggest they go further and formally merge their campaigns before the elections so that those parties offering alternative visions and values can be given more chance of getting their message across. Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
And Valerie Fieris writes that whisper surface is long-term solution. Sir, I rarely read the letters page in the Hampshire Chronicle, having become so tired of whinging Winchester. I spent most of the first 40 years of my life living there, but moved to Eastleigh many years ago, a far more positive town. However, having read your article concerning the disturbed residents of Chilbolton Avenue, Chronicle March the 19th, I'm now moved to whinge myself. For the thousands of people who live, work or are educated within earshot of the M3 between junctions 9 and 14, the current whisper resurfacing will reduce enormously the traffic noise, which has increased so dreadfully over the last 25 years. Finally, after campaigns, petitions and the hard work of our MPs, councillors and local people, we will be able to enjoy opening the windows, pottering in our gardens and generally getting on with our lives without the constant roar of the M3 in the background. Your poor souls, fortunate enough to be able to live in Chilbolton Avenue, will be inconvenienced for a short time. Buy some earplugs and give a thought to others. And that was Valerie Fieris, Barrington Close, Boyett Wood.
And that's the end of the letters to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. It's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, what do you think about the new shop in Stockbridge Road selling legal highs and ball-bearing guns? And also, what do you think about such products being sold on the high street? Shirley has the answers.
Yes, they asked Nishali Patel, 25, a shop worker of Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, and she said, a couple of people have come in to the shop and said they're not very happy about it. We were quite worried about it, and some of our customers said the quality wasn't very good. Then Bruce Gates, 65, retired, of Westman Road, Week, said, it's indicative of society. Taking drugs like that, youngsters are getting more and more drug-induced schizophrenia. And the BB guns are horrific. I don't think they should be sold. Paul Rutter, 62, who works for Hampshire County Council in Winchester, said, the legal highs definitely need more policing. The BB guns aren't lethal, though they can cause injury. And lastly, Harry Allam, 19, personal trainer of Austin Close, Abbots Barton, said, "I wouldn't expect it to be sold here. I think it's a bit weird. It's going to attract younger people, and I wouldn't expect it in Winchester."
Now we're going back to the mists of time into our dusty files for historical news items, and we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Richard.
And 25 years ago, the heading was Lost Cost Tenants in Early April. A new group dedicated to providing low-cost housing for rent expects to welcome its first tenants early in April. The Winchester District Housing Association was formed only last year, receiving its registration from the Housing Corporation in July 1989. Since then, the association's voluntary committee, led by Chairman Jeremy Overy, has worked hard to get its organisation and funding in shape to be able to make new houses and flats available to people who have a housing need. And the second item from 25 years ago, Winchester Flower Arrangement Society's March meeting brought together a large number of members and guests on a bright spring afternoon. Even the members' competition reflected the season with the title March Madness and was aptly won by Mrs. Penny Nayrood's avant-garde arrangement of spring flowers and dried bracts from a monkey puzzle tree. Mrs. Margaret Hyatt's March Hare, complete with F6 Penny Bopper, was first in the novices.
Let's go back 50 years ago. Jane?
50 years ago was March the 27th, 1965. Farmers invited to discuss price review. Six representatives of Hampshire farmers travelled by train to London on Thursday to meet MPs for the county, all of whom had been invited to discuss the 1965 price review. The background to the review was given by Mr. W.W. Bailey of Lymington, the county NFU executive chairman. Production costs had risen by $29 million, and the price review award was only $10.5 million. Farmers had been left to find over $18.5 million out of their own pockets, said Mr. Bailey. The Hampshire delegation said they had a very fair hearing, and the views of the members of Parliament were summed up by Mr. David Price, who referred to the 1965 determination as a thoroughly bad price review. And a second little item, the annual Tichborne Dole was distributed on Thursday, Lady Day, to the villagers of Tichborne, Cheriton and Lane End at the portico of Tichborne House.
And 100 years ago, please, Shirley.
Yes, 100 years ago, March 27th, 1915. Statistics shows drunkenness increase. Winchester City Bench. The position Winchester has occupied in the annual return, which shows the percentage of convictions for drunkenness in various towns, will be materially changed for the worse when the next statistics are issued. It will be almost wholly due to men who, earning good money chiefly as casual labourers on the camps around Winchester, abuse their prosperity by excessive indulgence in alcoholic drink. And it is right to say the city police are well satisfied that the majority of these men do not get drunk at public houses. Before the bench last Saturday morning, there were two such offenders, and there have been several others this week. Secondly, many thousands of men who are on their way to Salisbury Plain will pass through the city next week on different days, each section being billeted here for practically a few hours. Those who are in Winchester continue their cheerful work, which has already made them so fit. There has been only one fresh case of cerebral spinal meningitis in 12 days, and no death. The patient was a woman of about 50 years of age.
And finally, 200 years ago, over to you, Richard.
when a wagon stopped and money demanded. On Wednesday evening, as Mr. Ayling, a carter of Bramdean, was returning from Botley with his wagon loaded with coals, he was stopped by a soldier on the road between Bishops Waltham and Beanworth, who demanded his money, which the man refused. The soldier then knocked him down, and a scuffle ensued when he wounded the carter in the head with his bayonet in two places, after which a resolute resistance was made by the carter. When the soldier, finding he could not accomplish his purpose, he thought proper to make his escape towards Winchester. And also from 200 years ago, on Friday last at Alsford, a boy about 6 years of age was dreadfully burnt in the absence of his mother. At the time the accident happened, the boy was standing before the fire with only his shirt on when it caught fire, and the shirt was really nearly burnt to ashes before any assistance could be rendered. But he is now in a fair way of recovery. On Tuesday night, some dogs entered the sheepfold of Mr. Bulpit of Old Alsford and killed 9 lambs.
Jane is now going to read an alternative look at the news. Yes, it's Belgarum Diary.
And there are 3 little alternative looks from Belgarum this week. Firstly, hoax put students on illegal path. He claimed to be a youngster looking for love. A man known as Ben Colton has covered the streets of Winchester in posters looking for Victoria, a girl he said caught his eye in a city bookshop. Homemade flyers and chalk etchings asking, "Are you my Victoria?" have been spotted across the city, with hundreds sharing images on social media in a bid to find the elusive book lover. But Ben and Victoria's fairy tale story is a work of fiction, because the search is a hoax by students learning about online marketing. Students at Winchester University's School of Media and Film launched the viral campaign to promote an upcoming music video. But they broke flyering laws when they chalked on roads, pavements and even the front of Winchester Guildhall without consent. A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "Without permission, such activities would be illegal advertising, flyposting or graffiti, and we would ask those who place the items to remove them." The university has apologised to the council and warned students of the need to get permission. And secondly, boundary line proposal down to dog bin. A town councillor has proposed a change to the parish boundary because of a dog bin. Councillor Roy Gentry of Alsford Town Council suggested at the full meeting on Thursday, March the 19th, that the boundary should include Vernal Cottages and Bakeland Gardens, as well as the bit of no man's land between Titchbourne Down and the A31 bypass. "I know people will say, what difference does it make, but I will point out that there's a dog bin there and we are paying for it," he said. And finally, if only they knew there are no shortcuts for lorries. It seems even the latest navigation technology cannot conquer Winchester's notorious one-way system. Lorries and heavy goods vehicles sent down the narrow end of Upper Brook Street by sat-navs are tearing up the Victorian street, Belgarum hears. Overambitious truckers are clipping wing mirrors and damaging bollards as they navigate the bends, resident Mike Coker-Davis told a Police and Communities Together meeting this week. "You only have to stand out there for half an hour to see one," the former traffic officer said. "They don't know where they're going. They think it's a great shortcut." Mr. Coker-Davis wants restriction bollards fitted. Belgarum wonders if it will be more effective to put up signs warning drivers that once you're inside the Roman walls, there are no shortcuts.
Editorial comment. Few will celebrate new shops opening. Usually the opening of an independent shop would be a cause for celebration, a small victory against the tide of national chains. But few will be cheering the launch of a new shop in Stockbridge Road on Monday that sells legal highs and BB guns. Legal highs are substances that contain chemicals which produce a similar effect to illegal drugs like ecstasy or cocaine. They currently fall outside the Misuse of Drugs Act and are not controlled in any way. To make things worse, the shop is on a major route for secondary school children and students heading for Peter Simmons College. It is no wonder that parents in the area and further afield will view the opening with alarm. That the owner, who declined to give his name to our reporter, says he will only sell to adults is not the issue. The sooner the legal loopholes that allow their sale can be closed, the better. The Chronicle this week includes an interview with Councillor Ian Tate about his mental illness. He is one of the City Council's hardest working members, and only the ignorant world would question his commitment to providing social housing for local people. His openness in helping to break the taboo over discussing such illness is refreshing. We wish him a speedy recovery.
Now Richard's got first person.
And first person today is George Hayter, who has advice for Jeremy Clarkson. Jeremy Clarkson could try taking my advice, he says. I'm one of the very few people who've been in Jeremy Clarkson's shoes. From first-hand experience, I can sympathise with the Top Gear presenter's precarious employment situation. I, too, was once accused of assaulting a BBC producer. In my case, the alleged incident centred not on late-night food, but on late-night smoke. It happened on the 21st of February 1991, when I was working on The Late Show at Lime Grove Studios in London. The studios were demolished years ago, and The Late Show, going out live after Newsnight, was far too boring for anyone to remember these days. Even less interesting than watching the Late Night Arts magazine was working on it. For a graphics assistant like me, a shift on The Late Show involves sitting in a darkened room facing a wall of TV screens from after lunch till nearly midnight. My duties were little more than pressing the odd button on the desk in front of me. I should have stayed at home that day. I'd been in bed for a week with a stubborn chest infection and only went back to work because my conscience was overactive. What with my lingering wheeze, I was upset that few people were flouting the smoking ban that was imposed in all control room areas. My victim producer came up close to me, giving me instructions. When I got a lungful of cigarette smoke, I angrily pushed away the producer's hand holding the cigarette. The result a few days later was an official complaint. It was only a pushed hand, and my line manager was sympathetic. He told me to write a letter of apology. I did, saying my behaviour had been inexcusable. I resisted the natural urge to mention the no-smoking signs that were everywhere when the incident happened. "George, that's a brilliant letter," my line manager said before I posted it. The complaint was immediately withdrawn, and that was the end of it. So my advice to Clarkson is complete surrender. Whether the loose cannon of BBC Two is capable of surrender is doubtful, but the tactics seem to keep me in my job. So, Jeremy, resist the temptation to say there was provocation. Mention no culinary shortcoming experienced by you that night. Keep quiet about any lack of courtesy from production staff and any absent appreciation of your hard work and long day. Cease all confrontation with the complainant, and there's a good chance they will not want to confront you. Grovel further. Portray yourself as a weak and feeble lamb, unable to control his own emotions. Write that you're a difficult person to work with, and confess that you misuse your show business status. Accept that popularity with the public goes to your head. Admit you behaved like a spoilt child. And hope the letter isn't leaked. Otherwise your image is done for.
And Westminster Diary this week is read by Jane.
The diary comes from Steve Brine, the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Being elected to Parliament for the first time, as happened to me 5 years ago, is quite something, But being thrust into a new government is an experience I will never forget. Speaking at dozens of local events in recent years, I've said how fortunate I feel to represent this historic constituency. There have been too many highlights to mention, but my first PMQ, hard to explain, but even as you stand up, you're not 100% sure you won't faint, stands out. That and just the sheer enormity of the Palace of Westminster. I've hosted hundreds of constituents in the House, and some ask why I don't show them round. As the recent BBC documentary showed, getting to know it is something you never manage even after 30 years, so you're better off with the guides, believe me. My work on the influential Justice Select Committee was a brilliant chance to learn the craft of being a backbencher. I had always been interested in the criminal justice system and how we could better work with offenders to change behaviour instead of just banging them up. But working on this cross-party committee, chaired by the veteran Liberal MP Sir Alan Beath, gave me a chance to actually affect change. What's more, it allowed me to combine some of my work locally at HMP Winchester with our Police and Crime Commissioner, various local charities such as Home Start and the Troubled Families Programme at Hampshire County Council with national policy outcomes. My votes against a three-line whip were, I like to think, character-forming, but they soon taught me you have to be able to look yourself in the eye in this job, and if that means putting something else ahead of personal ambition, so be it. In 2013, I joined the government as a ministerial aide at the Department for Work and Pensions, and subsequently the Home Office, which has proved many things to me, not least that Yes Minister, and latterly the thick of it, was spot on in almost every regard. Working alongside truly reforming ministers such as Ian Duncan-Smith and Theresa May teaches you so much. Locally, I have been fortunate with a constituency that is engaged and almost always courteous to its local MP. I estimate I've corresponded with over half my constituency in 5 years and handle personal casework on behalf of some 5,000 residents. We may not always have agreed, but I hope my constituents have had a good service. All of the experience I now have as a constituency MP allowed me to run local campaigns and success around the resurfacing of the M3, new primary school places, and major investments secured for new transport infrastructure are things that I'm proud to have had a hand in.
Now here is What's On, as a ballet coming to the point. A radical 21st century reimagining of a classic French ballet is coming to Eastleigh this spring. Shabana Jayasinghe's Bayadère the Ninth Life is a radical reimagining of Marius Petipa's 1877 ballet La Bayadère. The story blends fact and fiction, weaving Petipa's original tale of love and revenge with the first visit of Indian dancers to Europe in 1838. Miss Jayasinghe, drawing on the original steps, aims to illustrate the West's fascination with the myth of the Orient. A mix of dance traditions from two continents will be set to original music by Gabriel Prokofiev, a London-based composer, producer and DJ. The ballet premiered in London this month and will come to the point Eastleigh on April the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £14 or £12 for concessions. To book, call the box office on 023 8065 2333 or visit thepointeastleigh.co.uk. Beauty and the Beast, a hilarious Easter panto, is on at the Anvil Arts on the 15th of April, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. And to book or for further information, please ring 01256 844 244 or there's a website www.anvilarts.org.uk. On the 2nd of April as well, Pond Dipping for Adults at Leap Country Park, Leap Exbury, Southampton. If you're interested in that, there's a telephone number, 023 8089 9108. And the 5th to the 6th of April, there's the Sealed Knot Civil War action at Basing House. And it's Barton's Lane, Old Basing, Basingstoke. And there's a cost for adults, £5.10, and concessions, £4.60. For further information, please contact 01256 463 965. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 27th of Feb at 5:53 a.m. and begins at 6:29 p.m. On Wednesday the 1st of April, it ends at 6:42 a.m. and begins at 7:37 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. Our chief editor, Bill Argles, would like to say hello to a new listener, and that's Val Green. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now, we're going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Shirley.
This is headed, Villagers' Last Shop Faces Closure. Pensioners are battling the closure of Upham's last shop as the owner claims controversial roadworks have driven him out of business. Elderly residents will be forced to travel miles for pensions, newspapers and groceries when Lower Upham shop and post office closes on May 17th. Owner Gary Datt says he has lost thousands of pounds in trade after Hampshire County Council installed a traffic island nearby, adjusting parking spaces outside. Tony Payton, 79, of Hoyle's Close, visits the small shop every day and said he would be completely isolated without it. "I've got cancer and I've got difficulty walking because I have a really bad leg," he said. "I've had to back up driving, so I would be really, really stuck. The nearest shop would be Bishop's Waltham or Fair Oak, which is, what, 3 or 4 miles away." Mr. Dutt said trade has dropped by up to £250 a day since the island was installed last year. "They've made it impossible for us to make any money. The council has tried to block us every step of the way. I can't afford it anymore." The crossing was fitted, despite residents' protests, to improve safety for schoolchildren, using a nearby bus stop. Almost 400 people signed a petition against the changes. County Councillor Rob Humby said the size of parking provision was exactly the same after the roadworks, and expected they would help trade. Mr. Dutt was offered grants to help sustain his business, he added. The shop could be saved if Winchester City Council makes it a community asset, blocking its sale for 6 months so local groups can prepare takeover bids. In a recent survey, 77% of villagers listed the shop as an essential characteristic of Upham.
Hospital too short-staffed to supervise. Health chiefs apologise over OAP's care. A Winchester pensioner died after falling and breaking her hip at a Southampton hospital that was too short-staffed to supervise her, an inquest heard. Health chiefs have apologised to the family of Margaret Warren after she fell out of bed when she was supposed to be under constant care. The 80-year-old, who suffered from dementia, was also put at risk when she was made to wait 10 days for surgery, Winchester Coroner's Court was told. 7 patients needed one-to-one nursing in January last year, and agency nurses could not fill the shift to look after, said ward matron Pat Spacania. She told the inquest that constant supervision couldn't always prevent falls, but admitted it minimises the risk greatly. Mrs. Warren was taken to hospital for plastic surgery on December the 10th, 2013, after falling at her old Arsford cottage care home. The housewife, formerly of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, suffered several complications during her three-month hospital stint, the inquest heard, falling twice in the week after she was assessed for one-to-one care. Trauma for breaking her hip during the second fall led to pneumonia and infections. Her condition deteriorated and she died on March the 31st, 2014. The family also complained about a 10-day wait for surgery and told our Mrs. Warren was taken off food at least twice before operations were postponed.
And here we have new home for Register Office. Winchester's brides and grooms will be married at the new premises following the opening of Hampshire County Council's new Register Office. The new centre, which also caters for civil partnerships, births, deaths and citizenship registrations, was unveiled at a special ceremony on Monday following months of renovation works at Castle Hill. The former offices at Station Hill were closed and sold to Winchester City Council last year. Mel Boys, Technical Standards Officer, said, "We outgrew the building and had the opportunity to move in here. As part of the move, the Register Office has now merged with the Library Services, increasing the 10 staff members to 16. Sarah Tears, Head of Libraries and Registrations, said, "It's about providing better value mainly to the taxpayer by putting departments together." And there's a photograph of the whole team standing in front of the new Register Office in a beautiful flint building on Castle Hill.
Culture in the spotlight. A television historian has rallied for people to support some of Hampshire's most treasured arts, culture and heritage institutions. Dan Snow is a face of the new film launched in Winchester last week by Hampshire Cultural Trust. The package focuses on the Trust's work in safeguarding the long-term future of the county's cultural venues for the coming generations. The organisation has taken over the management of a number of previously council-owned sites, including the Westgate, City Museum and the Gallery at Winchester Discovery Centre. More than 100 people gathered for the video's launch at Winchester Discovery Centre. The Trust's Chief Executive Officer, Janet Owen, and Chairman Alan Lovell explained the scheme and encouraged people to become ambassadors. In the film, Mr. Snow, a Hampshire-born broadcaster and star of BBC's The One Show, said, "The Trust's vital work can only continue with your support and contributions. Together we can safeguard and develop our vibrant cultural scene. Play your part." He added, "The Trust's championship of our county's world-class culture will be witnessed by a million people who will interact with the Trust each year, enjoying live performances, discovering great works of art, learning new skills, and understanding our culture." Mr. Lovell said, "The response of our plans has been astounding, and it really is an incredibly exciting time for arts and culture in Hampshire."
Police warn of bank details scam. Police are warning of a scam after three people were targeted in Winchester. Fraudsters attempted to obtain bank details or cash using bogus telephone calls and couriers. In each of the incidents on March the 12th, someone claimed to be a police officer from Hammersmith and stated that the man had been arrested and was possession of the targeted person's bank card. They were asked to phone their bank. The three people who received the calls all hung up without giving details. To report a similar incident, call police on 101.
And here we have unique model in danger of falling apart. The unique model of Winchester in Victorian times is in danger of falling to pieces unless a permanent home is found for it soon. The Town Forum recently heard that the 15-foot-wide model is getting damaged when it is assembled and taken down when put on temporary display. The model was created by the former Chief Planning Officer of Hampshire County Council, Roger Brown, 91, after he retired. Peter Lydiard, a friend of Mr. Brown, told the forum, "It is an extraordinary piece of work that took him 9 years. He would love to see his model find a permanent home. We are worried about its long-term future. There are worries that repeated assembly and dismantling will damage the model further." Mr. Lydiard suggested a permanent space could be found when the Guildhall is revamped. The County Council is looking after the model and is committed to displaying it for a month every year in the Great Hall. Eloise Appleby, Assistant Director at the City Council, said, "There is general enthusiasm. I haven't spoken to anyone who won't want to find a permanent home. It is becoming something like a cause celebre in Winchester." Councillor Robert Hutchison, Forum Chairman, said of the model, "This is quite extraordinary asset, a piece of art. Councillors have a duty of care. We didn't ask for it to happen, but it has happened. It is quite unique in the city." Councillors sounded warnings about the danger of inaction. Councillor Sue Nelm said, "Roger Brown has told me he's frightened the model is going to disintegrate. The more it is taken apart, the shorter its life will be." And Councillor Chris Pine said, "Winchester is doing what Winchester does best. We have been talking about this for I don't know how long." And it is accompanied by a photograph of the model with all the buildings and trees and grass and roads in full form.
Games and nostalgia help patients. Vulnerable patients at Winchester Hospital will stay active with the help of fun and games from new specialists. Puzzles, crafts, bingo, and 1930s nostalgia will be used to help elderly and long-term ill patients move and talk during their stay. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which has hired 10 activity coordinators across Winchester, Basingstoke, and Andover hospitals, hopes the treatment will stimulate patients mentally and physically. Dee Gemmell, one of the coordinators, said, "Some of our patients can lose their confidence and independence if they are in hospital for a while. We know that keeping patients stimulated and active helps them feel better and feel more confident about returning home. We have coffee mornings, and I feel that I make a difference to their days, making their stay easier and more enjoyable. Who wouldn't love it?" The coordinators come from clinical backgrounds and are specially trained on the healthcare assistant course. They are seeking donations to help roll out the service, including jigsaw puzzles, books, televisions, portable CD players, and household items from the 1930s. Donors are asked to drop items off at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital reception, Royal Hampshire County Hospital front reception, or Andover War Memorial Hospital's outpatient reception.
New scheme could transform GP care. A pioneering scheme has been launched that could transform GP care in Hampshire. Doctors in 27 practices across the county will team up with nurses, hospital specialists, therapists, and other community-based professionals to provide a more joined-up service. The aim is to make it more convenient for patients to be seen and treated. The multi-speciality community provider, MSCP, was approved on Tuesday by NHS bosses, along with around 30 others designed to improve healthcare, who will all share from a £200 million fund. It was created in partnership by GPs in the New Forest, Gosport and Petersfield, alongside Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust. The scheme was created to try to reduce pressure on hospitals, particularly emergency departments, and provide greater access to hospital treatments in community settings. Katrina Percy, Chief Executive of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Recent pressures on acute hospitals across the country demonstrate that current models of care are just not fit for the changing needs of our population. Too many people are spending too long in hospitals when with the right support they could remain in their own homes. The MCP model is our best hope to transform the way we deliver healthcare in Hampshire so people get the right care at the right place and time. Dr. Nigel Watson, Chief Executive of Wessex Local Medical Committee, said he was delighted the bid was successful. He added, "I believe this is a sustainable, out-of-hospital model which fills the void between acute care and general practice. This is about working with GPs, consultants, commissioners, therapists, local authorities and the third sector and our local hospice and finding a single delivery model to be able to achieve the aims we want to deliver. This is about better service for patients, for the NHS and for general practice." Despite the approval, a date has not yet been set for the project to be rolled out.
And now, praise for community volunteers. Bishop's Waltham's incredible community spirit was hailed at an awards ceremony for volunteers who saved and made lives in the leafy town this year. Everyone from medical responders and action groups to film clubs and street cleaners were celebrated at the annual parish meeting. A special award was given to John Glasspool and Jean Lovegrove for their vital roles in saving a runner who collapsed with a heart attack in the street this winter. Bystanders called 999 and gave emergency CPR before the marathon trainer was rushed to hospital for life-saving treatment. May Martin, presenting, said, "These two people are indeed good Samaritans of our community and deserve recognition for their prompt actions." Tracy Conduct, chairman of Bishop's Waltham Parish Council, said, "It was lovely to see so many groups with mentions and awards. I think it shows that Bishop's Waltham has a really good community spirit with a lot of people that give their time so freely to different things with the community." Jean Hamilton and Sandy Anning were named Joint Volunteers of the Year, with six others hailed for their work keeping the town safe, tidy, friendly and active. Ms. Martin said Jean Hamilton has not stopped working for residents through roles at St. John Ambulance, Friends in Retirement and Heart Start Medical Training, while Ms. Anning has tirelessly and selflessly backed good causes, including child literacy, trauma recovery and charity fundraising. "It was lovely, just amazing," Ms. Hamilton said of her win. "I had no idea. Bishop's Waltham is that sort of place. It's just incredible what goes on here." And this is accompanied by photos of all the award winners and nominees with the Parish Council Chairman, Tracy Conduct, all looking very cheerful at their awards.
Court case over visits to rapist is dropped. Prosecutors have dropped a case against a pensioner who allegedly formed an inappropriate relationship with a convicted serial rapist. Estelle Sandals, 72, was accused of forging the friendship with Paul Kent inside Winchester Prison, where she was working as a volunteer prison visitor. Kent was jailed for 19 years in 2013 for raping four women, but the Crown Prosecution Service has admitted that when Mrs. Sandals was charged, there was a mistaken understanding of her voluntary role. Mrs. Sandals of High Street, Droxford, declined to talk about the case, but denied forming any relationship with Kent and said she was angry about the way she had been treated. She was charged with misconduct in public office and appeared at Winchester Crown Court in January. The detailed charge said, "While acting as a public officer, namely a senior volunteer at Winchester Prison, committed misconduct in public office by forming an inappropriate relationship with an inmate." Her case was scheduled for a plea and case management hearing at Winchester on March 19th, but Mrs. Sandals was told early in the week that the case had been discontinued. The Chronicle asked the CPS to explain the reason for the charge and why it had been abruptly stopped. In a statement, the CPS said, Miss Sandals was charged with misconduct in a public office after it was alleged that she started a relationship with a defendant whilst she was in the prison visitors coordinator at Her Majesty's Prison in Winchester.
Patient fundraises from hospital bed. £10,000 raised for lymphoma awareness. A Winchester cancer patient has harnessed the power of social media to raise £10,000 from his hospital bed. David Craddock, from Cheriton, keeps a tablet computer by his bed at Southampton General Hospital and has taken to Facebook to raise money for lymphoma awareness. He was diagnosed with Burkitt lymphoma, a rare form of lymphatic cancer, in October last year. His social fundraising for the Lymphoma Association recently broke the £10,000 mark. The cash will help fund an online training programme for GPs to help them spot signs of the disease. More than 14,000 new lymphoma cases are identified in Britain every year, but it can be difficult to diagnose because many symptoms are shared with common conditions. The most frequent sign of lymphoma is a painless lump or swelling, often in the neck, armpit or groin. Mr. Craddock said, I've been overwhelmed by the generosity of everyone who has supported me. The fact this money has been used towards helping to inform GPs about lymphoma is particularly resonant with me, since I'm not convinced that my GP knew much about it when I was diagnosed. Mr. Craddock, discharged from hospital last month, also chronicles his journey online on An Ill Bloke's blog, a detailed account of his treatment, with information on fundraising and advice for sufferers. You can donate at uk.virginmoneygiving.com. It's all lowercase, all one word, virginmoneygiving.com.
And here, hundreds of jobs at risk in police. Chief Constable appeals to all political parties. The jobs of hundreds of police officers could be at risk at Hampshire Police if cuts continue at the same pace. That was the warning from Chief Constable Andy Marsh as he urged politicians of all parties to look at the police funding ahead of the general election. Mr. Marsh spoke alongside Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes, at a briefing where they said that £80 million of cuts meant 96% of staff now work in frontline roles. Since 2009, the force has shrunk from 3,748 officers to 3,101, and another 400 are predicted to leave over the next 2 years. The force no longer has any back-office function and is set to shut 33 police stations by 2018 as part of its new estate strategy. During the briefing, they revealed that at a time of shrinking budgets, the force is facing a 94% increase in reported rapes and 67% increase in other sexual offences. However, the constabulary has been praised for its efficiency and value for money in the face of cuts, and it was also revealed the force cost Hampshire residents just 44p a day through the police precept, in comparison to the national average of 55p. At the briefing, Mr. Marsh said, We have had two significant phases of cuts, and to make further significant savings along the lines which we projected in the budget, which looks like a further 27%. If that was true, policing in 2020 would be 50% of the size that it was in 2010. It would be a real threat.
Drivers can locate speed cameras. Police have launched an interactive online map of traffic collisions in Hampshire in a move which will allow motorists to locate the county's speed cameras. TrafWeb will pinpoint all crashes involving injuries across the county and Isle of Wight. Drivers can also use the tool to find fixed, mobile and decommissioned speed cameras in their area. It is hoped that the number of prosecutions tied to each camera spot will also be available in the coming months. Users can search for incidents by dates, times, and locations, with access to key details at the click of a button. On launch, the site will feature data from January 2011 to June 2014. It will be updated every 6 months with the results of new investigations. It is designed to complement the Crime Reports website, which maps a wider range of incidents. The site can be found at typehampshiretrafweb.co.uk.
Celts celebrate winning six-a-side title. Cub Scouts from Winchester jumped for joy after the annual six-a-side football tournament. The Celts team from the Wick-based 1st Winchester Scout Group won the contest, beating a team from Colden Common in the final goal in the last minute. The group's other team, the Vikings, finished third. The competition was held at the Worthy Sports and Social Club on the afternoon of Saturday, March the 14th. The win put the Celts through to represent the Winchester District Scouts in the county competition. Group leader Steve Feeney said that he was very proud of the effort shown by the entire team, saying, "We're also very grateful to South Downs Interiors, who paid for a new set of kit at short notice after realising that most of our 20-year-old kit had been lost during the renovations." And there's a picture of, in fact, eight boys, obviously shouting and jumping up and down with joy, very excited at their win.
Now saving money and doing good. The rooftops of one of Winchester's well-known buildings are being used to help save money as Hampshire County Council generates more of its own solar energy. Elizabeth II Court, the County Council's headquarters, is now topped with 90 solar panels, which are expected to generate around 21.8 kilowatts at peak performance, equivalent to powering a small primary school. County Council Executive Member for Income and Capital Receipts, Mel Kendall, said, "With the cost of energy rising over the long term, it makes sense for the Council to look ahead and invest in technology where there is a proven long-term saving. The government's feed-in tariff makes solar energy cost-effective if we do it now." The new panels are also set to cut the authority's carbon footprint by reducing its reliance on non-renewable electricity from the grid. And there is a photo of the Assistant Director of Property, Steve Clough, and the engineer, Paul Roebuck, with the line of panels on top of Elizabeth II Court.
Holmes Group turns back on councillor. A group in Horsford put together to help with ideas for draft plans for nearly 400 homes has turned its back on the councillor leading it. The Infrastructure Needs Group, tasked with identifying various local needs for Local Plan Part 2, cast a vote of no confidence against Councillor Margot Power at a recent meeting. The group is made up of residents, business owners and members of the Alternative Plan Group, which was formed last year and has created its own plan for Horsford. The issue of where to put hundreds of homes has been highly controversial. At the full town council meeting, Sam Carr Smiley of the group and the infrastructure group handed out a separate report and asked the town council to submit it to the county council. To the city council. He said the infrastructure needs group met and had a number of resolutions which were voted on by nearly 50 people. He said Councillor Power's report was rejected by the group and therefore it should not have been included with the Town Council's reports, which will be submitted as part of the local plan. Mr. Carr Smiley warned that if the Town Council did not send the report, further action would have to be taken. Resident Janet Barker added, "She, Councillor Power, no longer fills her role as a councillor." Later in the meeting, Councillor Roy Gentry said, "Can I suggest that it is forwarded as an independent report that we don't comment on?" Councillor Power said, it is not up to us to forward it.
Parishioner's fond farewell to rector after 12 years. Headbourne worthy parishioners are bidding farewell to their rector, who's leaving after 12 years. Alan Gordon, who looks after St Swithin's Church and St Mary's in Kingsworthy, is leaving for Pastures New in the Diocese of Lichfield. The former area dean's role as Vicar of Tamworth will take him closer to his children and grandchildren. Residents gathered at the Winchester Hotel to present Mr and Mrs Gordon with a cheque, a framed photo of the church and a basket of flowers. During his time, Mr Gordon has baptised 23 children, married 35 couples and officiated at too many funerals. Alan said, "I'm humbled by your generosity, your kindness, love and support to Ellen and I over the last 12 years. This was my first parish and it was a steep learning curve for me. I've grown to love St Swithin's and those who are part of it. It's been a privilege to be able to serve you in the parish." Mr Gordon's last service in Kingsworthy will be on Easter Sunday at St Mary's Church. And there's a photograph of Alan Gordon and his wife with their gifts, the photograph and a beautiful, beautiful basket of flowers.
And another farewell, this time to a postie. A former postman has been given a belated farewell party. Family, friends and villagers paid tribute to Broughton's ex-postie Jeff Collis's work in the community during a farewell presentation on Saturday evening. Jeff, who was 62 on Monday, retired in the autumn, but villagers were unable to give him a send-off then because he was undergoing a hip replacement. Village sub-postmaster Bob Gillespie said, "Jeff was an old-fashioned postman who liked doing his delivery rounds on his bike and was disappointed when he had to deliver in a van. He enjoyed meeting villagers and would go the extra 10 miles as a postman. He would check up on the elderly when he was doing his round. I know that he used to tap on the window of one old lady in the village to make sure she was okay." Mr Gillespie added that Jeff did a lot for the village behind the scenes and was a very quiet and modest man. During the party, Bob presented Jeff with farewell gifts that included a spoof Sun newspaper front page story with the headline, "Jeff, enjoy your retirement. Collis finally gets to sit back and enjoy retired life." He was also given a special cake decorated with a post box, a post bike and letters baked by villager Louise Elsie. Jeff, who is married with two sons and a daughter, said, "It is such a lovely cake that I don't want to cut it."
Inquiry after inmate dies. An inquiry has been launched following the death of a Winchester prison inmate found in his cell. Sheldon Woodford, 24, who was sentenced to 4.5 years less than a month ago after stealing a 90-year-old's handbag in Bournemouth, was found unresponsive on Monday, March the 9th, and died in hospital 3 days later. A spokesperson for the prison service said, "Every death in custody is a tragedy, and as with all deaths, there will be an investigation by the Independent Prisons and Probation Ombudsman. Woodford's family have been informed of his death," the spokesman confirmed. "He was known to be a vulnerable prisoner and suffered with mental health issues. Staff at the prison were aware he was at risk and he was being monitored. An inquest was due to be opened and adjourned at Winchester Coroner's Court."
And that, I'm afraid, is all we have time for today. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with a laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.